you're new to photography, you've probably come across a lot of new words like aperture, shutter speed, exposure compensation, and plenty more that'll boggle the mind. Let us clear the mist and explain it all in plain English on our iPhotography course. Over 18 online modules, you'll learn all the camera basics you need to get started in a self-paced course. Challenge yourself with fun quizzes, graduation tests, and even get a certificate to download at the end. Check out iPhotography.com/podcast for more.
So welcome along to the next episode of the iPhotography podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see that I'm joined by Emily. If you're not, Emily, give us a shout.
Hello, it's very, very good to be back.
Super, it is lovely to have you back on. So today, the reason why I thought you'd be the perfect candidate for this episode is that we're going to talk about cameras, and you are the queen of tech. That is your new title with the crown, DSLR, mirrorless shaped.
Yeah, I am happy with that. I shall be the mirrorless queen.
The mirrorless queen. Sounds like a song that ABBA should have wrote instead of Dancing Queen. Mirrorless Queen. I haven't even thought of any more lyrics, so I won't continue with that. But what a lovely start to the podcast. So, we are talking about that mirrorless v DSLR. This is kind of the debate. It's kind of one of those age old in the kind of recent years of photography, a big kind of question that people ask themselves when they're buying a camera. What do I buy? Do I buy DSLR? Do I buy mirrorless? It's different for each person, but there's certainly a rise for the kind of mirrorless market now, isn't there, Anne?
Yeah, I think when I certainly started getting into photography, mirrorless was very much in its infancy. And there were more cons back in the day. You know, it used to be they were more fragile or they had terrible battery life. Whereas now we're looking at sort of like several generations down the road of mirrorless. I think the gap is narrowing, and some people, including myself, might argue that mirrorless is the way to go.
Well, I would agree. I mean, I have to kind of put my, I have to kind of try and help the people that are interested in DSLRs and explain the pros and cons and the benefits to it, really. But yeah, I mean, personally, I've got a mirrorless. I'll put my hands up in the spirit of honesty. I have used DSLRs a lot in the past and moved to mirrorless because of some benefits that I'm sure Emily will kind of talk about in a little while. But I think there's to say there's pros and cons to both, really. So we thought that this could be a useful little conversation to have for people that are, you know, just stuck really in between, not knowing what the best options are, because I think there are kind of benefits for people using a DSLR depending upon what type of photography that they do. And same for mirrorless, really, isn't there, really? So we'll kind of also make it as a debate. We're not trying to kind of challenge each other necessarily, because I think we both do love mirrorless cameras. But yeah, we'll kind of have a wee chat about them, really. But I mean, as you said, you know, that the market for mirrorless is getting bigger and better, really. And I think I actually read very recently, as much as Canon is still pretty much the market leader, the DSLR market itself is starting to shrink. And I believe mirrorless and the companies like Sony, who pretty much just do mirrorless cameras these days, don't they? That they are getting more popular than the old steads like Nikon, aren't they? I don't know if you've seen that recently.
Yeah, for sure. I think in the photography community in general, there's definitely been a shift towards wanting a camera that will do very, very good video as well as for photography. And mirrorless definitely has the edge over DSLRs when it comes to video performance. And if you can get a camera that does both for basically the same price, why not?
Well, yeah, that's it. You never necessarily know if you're going to want to use that camera for video, but the fact that you've got the option there, as you said, photographers these days are not just photographers in some instances. If you're like yourself, you're running your own business, you're content creating, I suppose is the phrase these days. You're making video, you're making kind of loads of different types of kind of pieces of information for websites and for marketing, etc. So to have a camera that does everything, I mean, you see, obviously, there's you know, it's fairly standard these days to have a camera that has, you know, 1080p, you know, high definition filming quality. But do you find, as a business owner, as a videographer and wedding photographer, that that's kind of the, you know, the level you don't really want to go at? You really want to be looking more towards 4K and even 8K?
Well, it all depends on how you want to edit it. The benefit of using 4K is you can crop in a hell of a lot because you have much more data and more megapixels to work with. So if you're like me and you shoot your videos a little bit wonky, or you want to punch in on someone and get a close-up with only one camera, if you're shooting in 4K or 8K, I shoot in 4K primarily, you can effectively use several different angles just using one camera because you can zoom in without losing any resolution. Whereas with HD, because people are going to be watching it in HD, every time you mess with that frame, you are going to start losing quality.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose it would be the same on the stills front as well. Yeah, if you've got your image kind of at full res and you're full raw, anytime you're zooming in, even if it's a small amount, there is going to be a degradation in quality, really. But in terms of the mirrorless market, I suppose let's kind of look at it from that perspective. What's kind of a standard amount of megapixels? I know we shouldn't really get lost in the myth of megapixels necessarily, and you'll be the first to say it doesn't necessarily matter, but for people that are starting out, you know, who not really know where to turn somewhat, what's kind of a comfortable level of, you know, this many megapixels will do the job for pretty much most of what you're going to do?
So with the cameras that I have, a lot of my Micro Four Thirds cameras are 16 megapixels, which sometimes when you see, you know, you have 100 megapixels on a phone or whatever, some people think that 16 isn't enough. But when you think that, like, HD is 2 megapixels and 4K is 8 megapixels, you know, people aren't going to be looking on screens more than 4K, so you can crop in a lot.
Yeah.
In order to, you still get loads out of a 16 megapixel. My other cameras, my two full frame ones and my other Micro Four Thirds are 20 megapixels and 24. I don't have anything higher than 24 in my lineup. How about you?
I think I'm the same. My Sony, which again is on an APS-C sensor, is 24. I think it's like marketed as 24.3, but, you know, effectively 24. But yeah, again, I've never found a scenario where I'm like, ah, if only it was sharper. But that's necessarily, I'm allowed to kind of make it bigger. But obviously, providing I've shot it correctly and everything, then yeah, I've got an image as clear as I want, because the majority of my images nowadays I find go online. They go onto my websites or my blogs or whatever. And as you've totally rightly said, it didn't hit me till kind of quite a while ago when I actually read it, or I don't know if I worked it out, that when you're uploading an image to Instagram, so their kind of post size, one optimized size is 1080 by 1080 pixels, which works out to be 2 megapixels. And that is all you're ever going to get. So you're right, say having 24, 50, whatever, a million megapixels on a camera, it's never going to be seen more than 2 megapixels, depending upon where you upload it. So yeah, I think we may have gone slightly off on a tangent there to say, but really don't get yourself kind of lost in that kind of that myth that more means better. It does have benefits, obviously, when you come maybe to like printing. But if you're not going to do that, if you're just really using it for sharing and kind of uploading, then yeah, I wouldn't even look at it. I'd look at other kind of more important aspects. And I think the same goes with DSLR cameras. I think, again, they're very similar. They seem to keep a similar market between the two of them as to what a DSLR, you know, what the kind of the current range is in terms of megapixels, tends to be somewhat similar. I think that there starts to be differences when it comes to form factor. That's quite
a biggie. Yeah,
that's a big thing, isn't it? I mean, what's the benefit do you find with mirrorless? You know, what's the biggest differences between mirrorless and DSLR when it comes to like form factor for you?
So when I was looking to go from like my bridge cameras into getting a first proper camera, which was a Sony back in the day, I had this conversation with someone I knew, and the DSLR, I think, is designed to be not very user friendly. I feel like they're very old school in the way that they're laid out, and the menus are all like, you have to do this course and you have to do this and you have to know about all of this in order to use it. Whereas mirrorless came out and basically just went, we'll give you all of the Wi-Fi features, we'll give you apps, we'll give you usability, we'll give you all the things that you want. And it still has amazing image quality. So I think for me, I'm not a purist. If the camera can do something for me and I don't have to sit there for 10 minutes and figure it out, I'm all for that. And I think the joy of photography isn't about sitting down with a textbook and learning all the boring stuff. It's about getting out there and being creative. And for me, mirrorless, really, because it's more user-friendly, using your electronic viewfinder, you get a lot more data before you take the shot. I just think it's much easier to hit the ground running with a mirrorless camera, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think, yeah, for anyone that is starting out, you're right. It's not as cumbersome. They're not necessarily as heavy. I mean, you can still get light DSLRs, but the problem kind of think with photographers, this is just as a whole, not necessarily if you're just a mirrorless photographer or not, that you'll end up wanting to get more lenses, a battery grip, this, that, and the other, and you add more weight to it. So if you've got a camera that's a little bit heavier to begin with, a bit chunkier, and you're going to add bigger things to it, you're just giving yourself potentially a problem of lugging around a really heavy bag. That I actually went to see my dad recently, and he's kind of briefly very early started up photography, and so he's got like a small DSLR and he's put it in a camera bag, and he gave it to me, and I opened it up and there's so many little holes in the compartments. I'm like, oh my god, we need to kind of fill it up here and here and there. And that's just my mindset of like, we need to fill it up because there's empty gaps. And I gave him my bag, and he almost swore at me because of how heavy it was. And even though my camera bag is just a mirrorless camera with a few lenses, you add so many more things to it. And I thought, if I did have a really big DSLR in there, a big kind of chunky 1DX or something like that, then I probably wouldn't be able to carry it, and I probably would just turn off and go, you know, I'm not going to bother picking it up today because I'm just not going to be carrying something like that around in hot weather. But I see the trend of how it went, because if you look at things like DSLR cameras and other technologies like computers and phones and such, I mean, they started off at a certain size, you know, respectively, but then, you know, incrementally over the kind of the late 90s, early 2000s, everything got bigger. You know, the cameras got bigger, the screens got bigger, computers got bigger, and bigger was better, really, for a lot of people. And then there was this shift. You see it in the iPhones. Everything became a bit smaller and more compact and more slimline. And I see this as where mirrorless has really kind of capitalized on the market, because their form factor is a lot smaller. You can stick it in your pocket, stick it in your bag. You don't need to go and have an old big camera bag, you know, dedicated and made for your DSLR. So I think that's possibly where it's been quite beneficial in that instances. But I think there will still be kind of a range of people who like that that reliability and comfort of a big chunky camera. I don't know whether it's just like, you know, I look at my phone and thinking, yeah, it'll take pictures. It's not going to take the world's greatest photographs, because I know the technology inside's not as good as others. And I can see how maybe people would look at, you know, a small camera, say like a small Pentax or a Sony, and then compare it to maybe like a big DSLR Sony with a battery grip. As much as it may do the exact same things, you may look at the bigger one and go, well, it feels a little bit more comfortable, maybe a bit more robust. But I mean, I think they're pretty similar though as well. I don't necessarily see mirrorless cameras as being fragile, do you?
Oh, definitely not. And there are massive mirrorless cameras. I have a Lumix S1, which is the size of a decent Canon. And then the S5, which is basically the same camera, but smaller, because I realized that it was too chunky for me and I wanted the tinier one. But my business partner is moving over to Lumix mirrorless this year. And he was having this exact debate. We were looking at the S1, which is massive, and the S5, which is exactly the same in spec, more or less, but just like a traditional mirrorless camera, much smaller. Yeah. And his argument was that because he has bigger hands, he would rather have the larger form factor and have the dials and everything be a bit more easily accessible. But they're still both mirrorless cameras and they both do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So if you are looking at mirrorless, you could look at the tiniest things in the world, from the Pentax Q to the Lumix Micro Four Thirds cameras and the Olympus cameras. And then when we get to like the full frame versions, you do also have massive camera bodies as well. So
yeah,
form factor generally is smaller, but there is a wide range. It's more down to the features and how they perform, I think, more than form factor nowadays.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's always the option to add grips to them as well. I see a lot of third-party companies, they sell like grips that you can kind of bolt onto your camera. So if you've got big chunky hands, then yeah, and you feel a little bit more, I feel things a bit more comfortable like that, you can add to it really without, you know, adding too much weight. But lenses is the other thing I wanted to talk about. The range and selection of lenses for DSLR and mirrorless. I find some people say that there is a little bit more choice when it comes to DSLR, But at the same time, very recently, I've noticed Canon have started to discontinue quite a few lenses that they've got available for DSLR. And I started to wonder whether the rise of adapters, lens mount adapters, have been party to that. That now with mirrorless, I see that you can pretty much almost use any lens on any camera, providing you've got like the right mount. So, I mean, have you used anything like that?
Oh, I have adapters all over the place. When I first bought the original, the OG Sony, what's the Sony range? The A1 is that?
There's the Alpha series, yes. and when the lenses start going up, they go to a G series.
The A7 was that, yes. The first one?
Yes,
God, it was. I'm going back in time. When I bought that, it actually came with a Canon adapter, because they said at that point, you know, there's about 3 mirrorless lenses on the market, so we'll just ship it with an adapter. And recently when I got my Lumix full frame, that came with a Canon adapter as well. But the benefit of not having the mirror in place, it does make adapting lenses very, very easy. You can do it on your Micro Four Thirds and your APS-Cs as well. It's great. I have so many old vintage lenses, like the Canon FDs and some Pentax lenses and some... Oh, I've got too many lenses.
No, but you're so right. I think that's the joy of it, really, that you don't have to then go, all right, I've got to stick to my, you know, my Lumix camera lenses, or, you know, whatever brand that you've got, because you can literally almost, it's like kind of step up rings now with filters, that you can pretty much use any filter because you've got an adapter to fit to it. So you could borrow off your friends, but also it's effectively, you're kind of, you know, if you can borrow a lens off somebody, you're just buying the adapter to fit for it, which is, I say, they're super cheap, depending on where you go for them, because you can get ones that run a lot of electricals, can't you? So if you get the right ones, you'll still be able to automatically change your aperture and bits and pieces. But some don't have that electrical connections, and you just still have to use by manual focus, don't you?
For sure. In my experience, the ones that say that they'll do autofocus don't, the adapters. So if you do adapt your lenses, do assume that you'll be using manual focus. But yeah, one of the benefits of having a mirrorless camera is live focus peaking. Because you're getting a live continuous feed from the lens and the sensor, you're seeing exactly what the sensor is seeing in real time. Mm-hmm. So things like focus peaking and changing the exposure in your aperture, you can see exactly how it's going to affect the image as you're messing around with stuff. Mm. Whereas with your optical viewfinders on a DSLR, you could look through and all you're seeing is what the lens sees, not what the camera sees. So your settings could be completely wrong,
yeah,
but you're looking through the you're looking through the lens and you can see how it should look,
yeah,
but you don't get the live feedback.
Oh, carry on. No, I was going to say, I spent many years taking photographs, and I feel this is where the phrase of it is chimping comes, yeah, from. Because with DSLR cameras, you're totally right. You take the shot, you don't know if you've got it, because as you say, you don't know if your settings are all correct. It's kind of like shooting on film in a way, mm-hmm, but then you look straight back at the screen and go, yeah, I've got it, or no, I haven't. And then you change it again. But by that time, your moment may have gone. Where I think that's certainly where the mirrorless has a big benefit, is that the EVF, the electronic viewfinder, shows you exactly what it's going to be. And if you make changes whilst you're looking through that viewfinder or looking on the screen, you'll see the changes live. And I think that's a good educational way, isn't it, of understanding what all your exposure tools do and other bits and pieces. I think it's a good way to learn, isn't it?
I think so. And I think it takes a lot of the frustration out of things when you're first starting out. And it's not just about seeing the photo. You can add so much more information. Like I have a live histogram in my screen or my eyepiece. You can see your audio levels if you're shooting video. Mm-hmm. You can shoot in black and white and see black and white real time.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many wonderful benefits to the EVF. So some purists and certainly people that have come from film backgrounds with your optical viewfinders, the downside of your EVF is it will never look as clear as real life, because with an optical viewfinder you're literally looking through the lens in real life, whereas with your EVF you're looking at a tiny little screen. These have improved exponentially over the years, and as you get used to them quicker than you think. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, if you've never used the camera before, And you've maybe only ever used your phone. Again, phones are somewhat similar. They kind of have that kind of live reaction to any changes that you make. But a lot of the time, you pretty much just shoot on auto with most phones. So I think, yeah, if it's just like your first introduction to cameras and you're going into mirrorless, yeah, it's so easy because you don't know anything else. I think if you change, if you go from DSLR to mirrorless or vice versa, the change can be a big jump to getting used to. And you can sometimes forget that what you're seeing through an OVF, which we call an optical viewfinder, you can kind of sometimes get confused or forget that what you're actually seeing isn't going to be the final photograph. I have a feeling, I may be wrong, and I hope to be proved wrong necessarily, that there is maybe a benefit with the DSLRs in the OVF compared to EVF market, is that because obviously you're using more electricals to kind of power the camera and to provide this viewfinder, the battery lives will be better on the DSLRs because they're not using up as much power to kind of use those functions as well. Is that the case?
Very true. Shooting weddings with a Nikon shooter over the last few years. And when we were going, say, from the morning to the venue or to wherever, he would literally just leave his camera on in the boot. He's like, it's fine. Like it won't go down at all. And I'm here like, must save battery life, must turn it off every 10 minutes. And I genuinely, for my main camera when I shoot weddings, I have 5 batteries. My backup camera, I have 3 batteries. He was just like, yeah, I've got one in the tank. That's fine. That'll probably do me the next 3 weddings.
Yeah, when I have to recharge this for a few weeks.
Yeah, honestly, it is a big difference. But then you're using the electricity to have all these extra cool features which he doesn't have, so
I love your professionalism between you and your partner. But yeah, you're so right. I've noticed, I think with my Sony, again, depending upon obviously things like, you know, burst mode and other features that you're using, you can use power up quicker than others, but you maybe get around about 300, 350 shots per battery. Whereas you go to a DSLR, you could probably be talking about double, maybe 650 to 700, something like that. So yeah, I think that has an impact depending upon where you're going. You know, if you don't want to carry a lot of stuff, I know we talked about how mirrorless is a bit smaller and a little bit lighter. But the downside, like Emily said, is that you may end up having multiple batteries. And even though they're small, you know, you add, you know, 5 or 6 to your bag, and it's almost like having another lens in there really. So I think there is, if they can improve the battery life, you know, the technology behind it or whatever, or reduce the power consumption that mirrorless cameras are like, I think they'll pretty much eat up DSLRs in terms of their popularity, because they're starting to get there anyway. I've certainly noticed that battery power has gotten better, and I can't see it ever going backwards, because everybody now seems to want to live on wireless, you know, phones, computers, cars, everything's wireless these days. So I can't see how battery life is something that's just going to get forgotten in the camera world, is it?
And super fancy new feature in my newest cameras, they're all USB-C. So you can literally stick a power bank on the hot shoe and have it run indefinitely.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
It's so cool.
And they're so cheap as they are. You can get, you know, like 10,000 milliamps battery packs for next to nothing, really. And yeah, you could have maybe one or two of those in your camera and it can recharge it a couple of times over. So yeah, you can kind of stick your fingers up to all your DSLR friends, yep. And say, nah, nah, I've now got extra power and I'm not kind of like stuck into having to stand next to all the power sockets, really. But I think that was a really good kind of good comparison really between, you know, mirrorless and DSLR cameras, because there's benefits to each, but I think the rise and popularity of mirrorless cameras shows there is probably more benefits, I'd say, to a new photographer, and for someone who's maybe looking to change things up, maybe doesn't want to be carrying around so much kit and be laden down with all that kind of heavy equipment. But I mean, if, again, maybe to take this one step further a little bit, is there any particular mirrorless cameras that, again, if somebody was just looking for advice, any particular models on makes, Emily, that you would recommend?
So it really depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for something that's very compact, I would definitely recommend the Micro Four Thirds cameras, so your Olympus or your Lumix, because while the camera bodies can be very small if you're buying a full frame mirrorless, you're still stuck with usually quite massive lenses. If you get a smaller sensor, you will get smaller lenses. So for when I'm on my holidays and I'm mooching around, or if I just get on the train and go to Liverpool or whatever, I will take my Micro Four Thirds cameras, because not only the body is tiny, but the lenses are tiny as well.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a full frame sort of DSLR experience, but in a mirrorless version, then you would be looking at your Sonys or your Lumix.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And I think on the DSLR side, again, depending upon what you're looking for, but if you're talking entry level, you'd probably be looking at your Nikons and your Canons, because they've been around for so many years. They know what they're doing. Sometimes it looks like they don't, and they're making things so overly complicated that it just isn't necessary. But I think half of that's down to marketing somewhat. But for the likes of Nikon, I can speak because I bought them previously, and Nikon D, I think it's 3500, is a good starting size. It's not massive, but it gives you the DSLR experience, and you know, you've got the ability to add lenses and change them, etc. On the flip side, on Canon, I would say something maybe around about the Canon 250D. I think there was another one, maybe, I don't even know if it's out anymore. They had like a 500 or a 550D that was quite good a few years ago. But I mean, this is like a shifting sand. This is like the problem we're talking about cameras so much, that we could release this this podcast and in 12 months, like the cameras we've talked about may not even exist. So I think just talking about the functions and the features you should be looking for are the most important things with whatever camera brand, because brand to brand, there's maybe some slight subtle differences, but on the whole, they tend to be pretty similar, would you say?
Yeah, I think when one thing to note going back to our DSLRs is check the age of the camera, because people might think as long as they get a full frame camera, they will be amazing in low light and they'll have all of the features. But if you're buying a camera with an older sensor, the technology just wasn't as good. Like, I've used older Canons in the past, and sometimes those are not as good in low light as more modern cameras. So yeah. If you absolutely want a full frame, don't get one that's donkey's years old.
Yeah, I know, you're so right. I do look at sometimes like the chipset or the processor of what's running that sensor and see the age of it, definitely. But there we go. Well, thank you very much for that, Emily. It's been a really, really kind of good little good debate and discussion, and hopefully we've provided with you some little ideas and kind of things to think about and to have a look at if you are at that kind of juncture of not sure whether you want to go to mirrorless or DSLR, or you just haven't got a clue what camera to buy and you're just starting out. But you know, if you are at that kind of point that you are trying to make that decision and you've got any other thoughts that you think you can kind of contribute to this, then get in touch with us, because we'd love to kind of hear your thoughts and your experiences if you've moved from DSLR to mirrorless, or you know, APS-C to full frame, or vice versa. And we'd love to kind of know why people make these changes, what kind of runs the market, etc. Because it's interesting to see the sands of change. But you can get in touch with us on all the social medias. We've got our own email address. You can get in contact with us at tutor@iphotographycourse.com. If you've been enjoying these podcasts, or if you're watching it on YouTube, then please, please, please subscribe and follow. It really, really helps us out. That'd be greatly appreciated. And myself and Emily will be back in another episode soon, shouldn't we?
Absolutely, yeah. I could talk about cameras all day.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for listening. It's bye from us, and we'll see you soon.